Welcome to the Music Ed Matters podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Emily Williams-Birch, and this podcast, it exists for you. Whether you're a music lover, an educator, a choir member, each week we bring guests to the show to help explore what matters in music. I'm so glad that you're here. Welcome to the show. Hello, and welcome to the Music Ed Matters podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Emily Williams-Birch, and today we are talking to conductor and author John Hughes. I heard about John Hughes from our mutual friend, Michael John Trotta, who writes some epic music and has been such a great recommender for guests for the podcast. If you didn't listen to Trotta's episode way back in the beginning, I think it was one of the first 10 episodes I did, and yet he still recommends people. Thank you so much. Anyway, we talked to John about his new book that he just published called Letters to a Young Conductor, Thoughts on Music and Life. And the really cool part is as we're going through John's story, you understand why this book is really impactful and meaningful. It's a quick read, highly recommend. Don't take my word for it. Check out this episode to learn more. This episode is brought to you by our friends over at Perform International. If you are thinking about places you want to go or things you want to see stateside or abroad, check out perform-international.com and let them know Emmy sent you. All right, that's enough for me. I can't wait for you to meet my new friend, John Hughes. Today on the Music Ed Matters podcast, we are talking to conductor and author and my new friend, John Hughes. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
I'm so excited to finally get to talk to you after having read your whole book, after you being so highly recommended by one of our mutual friends. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
It's an honor. It's going to be fun.
I'm stoked. Okay, so I've already been asking you some questions offline, so we need to get the listeners caught up. Who is John Hughes and how did you get to where you are today?
Well, it's kind of a long story. I'll try and keep it brief. So currently I work as a kind of professional freelance conductor based in Chicago. My main thing is Chicago Master Singers, which we can talk about. It's a great, well-established volunteer chorus of about 100 members. I also do the Green Lake Festival of Music in Wisconsin. We do the Choral Institute, where we do like a major work in the summer in a week. And then I also started the composer residency there, where we bring in a composer and do a whole concert of their work in a week too. So that keeps me pretty busy, those two things. And then on top of that, you know, I do district choral festivals and stuff like that. So I keep pretty busy. In terms of how I got there, though, I think that's kind of like what I'm interested in talking about and writing about in this book, which I have right here, Letters to a Young Conductor. And I don't mean to just like promote my book, but let me just tell you a little bit about like the main point. So I think like a lot of young music ed people, I was in college and watching my college choir director, who I still admire greatly, and kind of discovered that there's this kind of quintessential choral blueprint, right? You get a music ed degree, you teach high school, middle school. Maybe you get a master's degree, you teach at a bigger high school, you get your doctorate, and then you start to climb this ladder, right, of getting a college, you know, DCA job, and then maybe moving, trying to move up to a university level and all this stuff. And I was fortunate. I was able to do a lot of that pretty quickly. And all of a sudden, I kind of got there and I was like, is this it? Like, I felt very unfulfilled, right?
That's so interesting that you say that. You know, the January like episode the was exactly that. Yeah, the checklist. Oh, really? You're right on. Yeah. Right. Keep going. This
and
is
so,
awesome.
So it's just like, I got there and then I was like, is this it? You know, I at the time I was, you know, 35 or 36 and department chair and all this stuff. And it was like, now what? You know, because I was so focused on getting to this destination that I kind of felt like I lost touch with myself and like, well, what do I actually want to do? What do I actually want to do with music instead of just like climbing this ladder perpetually? And so a lot of what I've been doing in the past few years is kind of reflecting on like what in our field perpetuates this checklist and maybe finding ways to challenge that checklist and maybe chart your own path a little bit more, which is kind of what I'm trying to do. So right before the pandemic, unfortunately, I left my tenured position and moved back to Chicago, where I'm originally from, and am now making it as a freelancer and trying to inspire other people to think outside the box, maybe take a risk, and realize that choral music doesn't have to be a one-size-fits-all box of this is what you do, right? It can look different for everybody, and that's fine. It's not a, there's no judgment on, you know, staying where you are or moving on from where you are or whatever. It's like, there's lots of things that go in, there's lots of factors that go into career development. And I think we should be gentle with ourselves and each other about how we develop as people and musicians.
How did you get into music ed in the first place? So it makes total sense when you get here. And I think this whole reinventing what we can do with our skill set, that's something we've talked about in December and in January. This is an ongoing conversation in our field right now. But how did you get into music ed? Why did you choose that in the first place?
I had no plans to go into music ed. I applied to college as an English major. I thought I was going to, I don't know, my dad's a lawyer. So I was like, well, maybe I'll be a lawyer, or maybe I'll do communications. You know, I liked writing a lot and I like communicating. And really in high school, I was just like a kid who liked to sing, right? Like I was really involved in our music department. I was in vocal jazz and musicals and, you know, all the typical stuff. And then my senior year of high school, we did a choir tour to Indianapolis, and we went to Butler University and worked with James Mulholland, who is like a great composer. Yes. And we were singing this piece, If Love Should Count You Worthy, which is just, if you don't know that piece, it's like, it tugs at your heartstrings. And we had this clinic with him, and he just like really inspired me. And he kind of, in a loving way, kind of picked on me and was like, you seem, you know, let me ask you these questions in front of everybody. And it just really inspired me. And that was probably like March, like spring break of my senior year of high school. And then it just planted a seed. And that summer, before I actually started college, I decided I'm going to do it. And so luckily I was going to a school, Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois, a small liberal arts college that was open to, you know, it wasn't like I had to audition into a music program or anything. I just took the classes and did it. And, you know, looking back on it, lots of things from my childhood, it makes sense. You know, I took piano lessons. I grew up going to church and singing hymns all the time and picking out parts, and I played instruments. And so there's lots of things, like I had the tools to do it. And obviously like the love of language that choral music gives us. So I kind of found my way into music ed, and it seemed like, oh, this is something I can do, right? And so I haven't looked back, but it was kind of a risk, I guess.
What a cool story. But then how you finish your undergrad at your small liberal arts school, and then you got a master's and a doctorate. How did all that just doesn't happen? You have to be intentional.
Right. I think, you know, I'm just kind of the type of person where it's like, if I'm going to do something, I want to do it really well. And I think, to some extent, that's been a very good thing in terms of, like, you do have to hustle in music. Like, there's no doubt, right? Like, there's a million people. There's not that many jobs, right? And so you have to be good, and there's so much to learn, right? Like, just to be able to stand in front of a choir, you have to be an expert in so many things. But on the other hand, I think some of that ambition and competitiveness can be a detriment, right? Like, I wish I had taught high school maybe a little bit longer and wasn't in such a rush to move on, right? I wish I wasn't so competitive and, you know, sometimes cynical about things and more took my time a little bit. I talk a little bit about that in the book, like what's dangerous for young conductors, I think, is when you start viewing your ensembles as like vehicles for your own advancement. Mm. And instead of people you need to serve, right? They're there, you're using them to get into this conference so that you can get the better job next year or whatever. And I don't think I was ever like super Machiavellian about stuff, but I definitely slipped into that, and it kind of made me miserable. Right. And so I'm trying to help people see, like, you don't have to be that way and you can still be successful. Yeah.
Well, I know that as another A-type personality, another, there are right. times where you're the intensity that we live life, you feel is, oh, I wish I wasn't so intense. But at the same time, I wouldn't be who I am today if I wasn't that intense.
Right.
And yes, there are times I wish I could not be quite as intense as I am, but that's just who I am. And sometimes right. it's nice to like find another human who's like, wow, I'm a lot and that's okay.
It's a lot and it's okay. And we can, yeah, oh, I can get stuff done. It might not always be the best, but it will be done on time and ready to go. Right. And I guess that's kind of what I'm saying is like, you know, it's okay to be open to taking a detour from the path, or maybe not going as quickly as you could and maybe doing a better job. I wish I had done that. And I think the other big thing, and which I have really learned the hard way, is that you need to separate your achievements from your self-worth.
Mm.
Because you are more as a person than your degrees, or what concert venues your choir has sung in, or what repertoire you've conducted. I think it's really easy to kind of say, well, my choir sang this piece in this cathedral in Europe, and that is me. It's like, no, you're also a son and maybe a partner, and you're also, you know, you're so much more than just your work. But it's really hard to separate that. But I think it's something that I've really grown to see the value of. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And it makes complete sense. Having now read your book, there is a chapter on separating your achievement from your self-worth, which I thought was really good, especially in this whole like Instagram society, influencer society.
Oh my gosh. Right.
But what sparked, you told us a little bit about the book in the beginning of our conversation. When did you full on decide these ideas in my head are a book, and why did you decide on this title and this process?
Sure. Well, I guess, I mean, I talk about in the book right before the pandemic, maybe like 2018, 2019, I kind of, like I said, I kind of had everything that I ever wanted, right? Like we were living in Wisconsin. I was teaching at a small private liberal arts school. I lived like, we had an acre of land. I walked to work most days. Like we had this beautiful Mayberry life. Everything was going really well. And then I had this kind of crisis of like, is this it? I'm 35 and like, I'm just going to do this for the next 30 years. And it really, I spiraled, right? Like it was really, I got really dark there for a while. Just kind of feeling lost and like, I don't even know who I am anymore, because all I worked for 10 years was like this checklist, this achievement, right? And so I kind of found my way out of it, right? You know, I went to therapy, which is great. And I recommend everybody do it. Whether you're having a crisis or not, I think it was a great gift to me. And then I, like I said, I left this job and moved to Chicago and started a new life. And then the pandemic hit right after mm-hmm. I signed my contract, and, you know, I had to figure out all that, as we all did. But then it really, I wrote this book probably about a year ago now, like New Year's 2023. And it was like, I felt like the world was kind of really coming out of the pandemic. Everything was kind of felt right again, right? Like we were doing concerts that were real concerts, right? And everything started to click. And it was like, I've grown so much from 2019 to 2023. And I've learned so much that I need to write this, even if it's just for myself to remember, right? Like I talk a lot about like, what's the point of a concert in this book? What's the point of rehearsal? Why, what are we trying to do with this choral music thing? And I wanted to kind of memorialize that in this book, because even if no one else reads it, I need to read it myself sometimes, you know, so mm-hmm. actually for preparing for this podcast, I reread the book. It's not very long. And I was like, oh yeah, you know, I should remember that more myself. You know, it's like, there's just a lot of things that I've really grown to do, and it's very easy to forget them or fall back into bad habits of kind of ambition or cynicism or judgment. And I don't want to be like that, right? And it is a choice, right? You can choose to fight against it, right? Even if it's a hard choice, right? So I wanted to write it for myself, and maybe some other people will get something out of it too.
There's definitely some amazing nuggets in here. Let's kind of break down the book a little bit. It's really well organized into different sections. And
are we surprised that a type A person would have it all?
Like the organization of, I knew we were going to be fast friends because the organization of your book made sense, and the way in which you structured your paragraphs and you're like, this is my people. We are talking the same language. Yeah. Yes, I knew already. So you talk up, there are a few sections I want us to talk about. So we open with mindset, which I think was really intentional and super awesome. Give us a little overview. What were you hoping to cover in that mindset section? And what is someone going to get out of it when they look at it?
Sure. I think like the main point is this, that you have to, that you as the conductor have to, and by conductor, I mean teacher, like whatever, you know, if you're in front of musicians in whatever capacity, you have to have done some work on yourself, right? And you have to be there for the right reasons. You have to have this mindset of, my choir's performance isn't a reflection of me as a person, right? Because I think when we think of it as a reflection of us, then we can get into some really nasty habits of being hard on our singers or like whatever. And so I spend a lot of time kind of talking about, how do you separate yourself from yourself, your self-worth from your achievement? What's the point of a rehearsal? What's the point of a concert, right? So that we get into this, how are we approaching music? Which I think I, as a younger conductor, didn't often think about, right? It was just kind of like, I want to do this piece. We have a concert in 8 weeks. Here's the fastest way to do it. Check, you know? And it's like, what I wanted us to think about is like, well, what are we trying to say through this music? Or what are we trying to give our people, right? So it's kind of trying to set up that framework of thinking about what you're doing, having an interpretation of what choral music means to you before you start waving your arms.
You do a really great job of framing it all from a positive, you even one of the chapters is I Choose Joy. Like you frame all of the mindset from such a positive place, and it's really exciting. It leads really well into the second section about rehearsal. And I love how you didn't just call it leading a rehearsal or running a rehearsal, it's hosting a rehearsal. So tell us a little bit about this rehearsal section.
Sure. Well, yeah. So we go from mindset, like this is stuff you need to think about on your own, to, okay, now you're in front of people. How are you going to do it? You know, and this is something that I've kind of come to, especially working with Chicago Master Singers. We meet once a week on Monday nights, right? So I see them for about 3 hours, and I kind of realized, you know, and I'm almost 40. So I'm like, I don't know, halfway through my career, maybe a little less, you know, it's taken me this long to realize, to remember like, oh, these are people with other lives, right? I didn't always appreciate that when I was teaching high school and college, right? I was like, oh, you're a music major, that you should care a lot about this choir, right? And it's like, well, they probably should, but they also are complete people with other lives too. But working with adult volunteer amateur singers, that has become more and more clear to me, right? These are people who are doctors and lawyers and, you know, moms and dads and people, and they come together for 3 hours. And so, first of all, it's really clear that they have other lives, right? I don't see them throughout the rest of the week. But then I also want to make that time really valuable to them, right? Why? I mean, that's a long time on a Monday night after you've worked all day to come sing for 3 hours. That's a huge ask, right? So I kind of have developed this idea of hosting, like you're hosting a dinner party, right? So I want to be really clear about, this is what time I want you to come. This is what we're going to do. I want you to feel like I've thought about you all week, which I have, and make this as clear as possible and remove as many obstacles to getting to the fun part of singing as possible, right? So being organized, sharing recordings, I scan all the scores and upload them so that they have all the markings right away, right? Trying to get rid of all the stuff that can be kind of like drudge work so that we can get to that joy of communal singing as fast as possible, right? And kind of feeling like, yeah, I'm in charge, but I'm not a dictator, right? I'm more like a host and welcoming you to this great party I've planned, right? And I think that's been very successful for the singers and also for me to just feel that I can be really gracious that way. And I think that there's something kind of magnetic about that.
The Southerner in me really loves that we're now calling it hosting a rehearsal.
I'm very excited
to play hostess. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I love this mindset.
Right. Okay. Yeah,
this is awesome. And you provide in the coda, the fifth section or the appendix, you provide so many great resources, including like how to prep for rehearsal, how to allocate time, how to make, there's so many great resources in that coda. And it makes sense because the next two sections talk about the concerts and the career. So tell us a little bit about those sections.
Yeah, well, let me just tell you, first of all, that all the all those materials are you can download for free from my website in editable format. So like take them and improve on them. I always say, people always tease me. They're like, oh my gosh, you're so organized. How do you have time? Like, I don't have time not to be organized, right? Like, this is just stuff I've developed because I get comfort knowing that everything's planned, you know? So feel free to use it and improve on it, whatever. Okay. So then I guess in the concert section, my favorite part of it is this section called The Problem with Perfect, right? Mm-hmm. I hate the word perfect.
Ditto.
And I think it doesn't belong in music. And I think a lot of it comes from this idea of, like, if you go to a conference, I don't mean to pick on ACDA, but I think a lot of us have been to an ACDA conference. You hear choirs sing. These are amazing choirs, right? And people around you are like rolling their eyes or chit-chatting about like, oh, I hate that piece, whatever. And it's like, okay, rude, first of all. But then I think second of all, I at least as a younger conductor felt like that's why people were coming to my concert. That they were coming to judge me and to think, to critique my choices or whatever. And what I've learned is like, no one's doing that except other choir directors. So 99% of your audiences are moms and dads and friends and whatever. They're there to support their people. And so we shouldn't worry so much about it being perfect because it won't ever be because it's music. Instead, we should be focused on providing an environment of joy and inspiration and uplifting. That's something we need. And there's a possibility in live performance for that. If you only wanted to hear a perfect recording, then or perfect performance, you should just stay at home and listen to Voces 8. Like, great, it's going to be perfect. You know, they're so good, right? But the magic of live performance is that it feels real. And when you can invite the audience into this like conversation between the choir, you, the audience themselves, the composer, like music, capital M music, right? Like that's magic. And it doesn't matter if a note here or there is off or whatever, because like no one cares, right? People don't come to concerts for perfection. They come to feel something. And so that's like really changed how I view everything about a concert, like not just the music I choose, but how I talk to the audience, how I write program notes. I used to write program notes like Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart was born in 1756 and died. And it's like, who cares? No one cares. You're just showing off that you looked up his dates. Instead, I want to invite people like that host into, here's why you should care about Mozart's Requiem. Right? This is an amazing piece. It's been around for hundreds of years. This is why it's still relevant today. Right? So like, how can we invite people into this special world of music? That's what Weston Noble calls it. How do we invite people instead of treating audiences like passive bystanders who are observing this thing that is perfect. It's like, well, it's not perfect, you know. So I guess that's a lot of what I'm thinking about. Yeah, go ahead.
It's when you look at, there was a bonus episode that dropped in December by Ruth Hart, who is runs this company called Culture for Hire. And we spent the whole conversation talking about how do you touch on all the different motivators that brings an audience into your audience. And you're hitting on all of them. That some come to feel, some come to be in community, some come to hear. You have to be able to address all of those. And it starts from how you host your rehearsals, how you host your concerts, how you perceive that quote problem with perfect situation. Right. So what a great segue. And then it all ties in when you look at those three sections together, mindset, rehearsal, and concert, it ties in perfectly for building a career, which is your next section in the book. So talk to us a little bit about that. You've already given us some little tips along the way, but give us some more.
Yeah, I guess I think with building a career, it's more about like finding what works for you. You know, like I with Green Lake and Chicago Master Singers, you know, those are mostly adult amateur groups, right? They're just people who like to sing. They sing at a very high level. They work really hard. They work a lot harder than some of my college students did. And, you know, it's like, I would never have guessed when I was 18 that this would be a career path for me. You know, like I don't know how I came to it, but it's like, that is kind of a niche for me. You know, for some reason, I really click with those that in that setting, whether it's a church choir or community choir or whatever. And so like, do more of that, right? If you don't like teaching high school every day and showing up every day and doing all this stuff, then don't do it. You know, like figure out something else that you do really like and you can do really well. And it might be something that no one else is doing, right? It might be something that you've not seen before, and that's what's scary, right? But I think there's enough room in the choral world for lots of different career paths, right? And it's not a one size fits all thing. University director of choral activity jobs are not necessarily the pinnacle, right? They can be for certain people, but like, let go of that, right? And just kind of figure out who you are and what brings you joy and what connects with singers and do more of that. So for me, it's like, I do really well in either adult amateur singers or like coming and doing like, I'll give you a week long experience or 3 days or 1 day experience that's going to be top notch. And I'm going to inspire you and we're going to make music together and have fun. And then I'm going to move on, right? For me, that works. I like that kind of work. And I'm, you know, trying to develop a career in it, you know, but I think it takes some reflection to get to like, okay, I've always wanted to be this, but actually my skills might be that, right? So it takes reflection, takes some bravery to like chart a new course that maybe you haven't seen other people do. And I think it takes some luck, right? I've been very privileged and fortunate in my life. I have a great partner who has a day job and health insurance and everything else, you know? So like, I think that's been very beneficial to me too, you know? So I'm aware of my privilege too. So it's a lot of things. And I think when we can separate, going back to this idea of separating our achievement from self-worth, it's like, be open to the fact that maybe right now you want to focus on being a mom. Great. There's nothing wrong with that, right? And so if you, but if you are tying it to your self-worth, then you might not go for that job or whatever. And it's like, when you can separate the two, then you're like, oh no, like, being a mom is really important to me right now. I don't want to do that other thing because I'm a whole person. I'm more than just my job, right? So it takes some kind of self-awareness, I think.
It's so important though to reflect and to be willing to have that reflection, to pause. And in a career where we often, especially when we're in the rat race to go up the ladder, we don't pause and reflect. We're just trying to get it all done, working 8 million jobs and saying yes to everything. And it's amazing right. what happens when you stop for a second and look in the mirror and make sure that you are being true to your authentic self and doing your your thing. I love what you said, to find what brings you joy and do more of that.
Yes, exactly. Well, and like one of the things I was, when I was rereading this yesterday, I noticed a sentence that's like, you know, you climb this ladder and church choirs and community choirs are used along the way to pad your income and your repertoire list. And I remember writing that sentence, and I don't know if people pick up on it, but it's like, I picked that word intentionally, are used along the way, right? I know for myself, it's like, I got to pay the bills. I'm going to get a church job, right? And it's like, was I really being authentically genuine with those people? Or was I just like, I got to pay for grad school, right? And so, yeah, how do we, you know, it's good to have those experiences and it's good to learn to work with different groups. And yeah, sometimes you got to make more money and that's a good way to do it. But how do we do it in a way that doesn't feel so icky and so kind of like a mercenary, you know? So those are things I've thought about, you know, and that's why I just want to write them down, if for no other reason, so that I could reread this book once a year and be like, oh, yeah, I need to take my own advice a little bit here.
I love it. I love the reasoning behind it. And I love the authenticity behind it and the vulnerability, just sharing so openly and talking about some of the things that I think have not been a big part of our career development and our education, which I think is why the ladder exists, but that's a conversation for another time. I'm really excited about this resource. So I hope that I have all the links in the episode notes so people can check out either the hard copy or the Apple ebook version, Letters to a Young Conductor, Thoughts on Music and Life. And it's a fun, fast, and very just refreshing read. So thank you for writing it.
Thank you. Well, thanks for having me on and talking about it and being interested. And if anybody, you know, wants to get in touch, you can go to my website and send me an email. I'd love to hear about your journey. And I just hope everybody knows, like, there's a lot of friends in choral music who are talking about this, and it's okay to be different. And I'm here to cheer you on as you figure out who you want to be and how you want to be it, you know, because I think I'm here for it. So I just wish everybody the best of luck.
I usually give the guest a chance to say the thing that matters, but I think that's the thing that matters. That's what I want.
It's okay. And it's okay to be you. And it's so cheesy, but it's like, it is the hardest thing to be. And I hope that just this little book and just hearing my story might inspire you to do something different. Right. And it's okay.
It is okay.
So that's what I
want to
say. Yeah.
Yay. Well, I'm going to seek you out when I come to the Chicago Marathon in October. You better be ready.
I would love to meet you in person. It'd be fun.
Yay. That'll be so fun. Well, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
All right. What did you learn? What about that amazing quote? Find what brings you joy and do more of that. Or host a rehearsal like you host a dinner party. Yes, please. And then that last line, it is okay to be you. Say that again for the people in the back. I have some other quote cards here, but I'll put them into some pretty infographics and you can find them on our Instagram. Speaking of which, make sure you're following Music Ed Matters podcast on Instagram. You can also go head over to patreon.com/musicedmatters. And there are different levels of membership over there where you get bonus episodes every week from yours truly. last month's bonus episode was so funny. It was really, woo. Anyway, please do check that out. Every single dollar that you put over there goes to support a few different things. First of all, hosting the podcast, you have to pay for storage and publication rights. And then also every single guest gets a little card and a little present for their time. So thank you so much for all of you over there supporting the podcast and making it happen. All right. I think that's all I have to say, except my favorite part. You, my friend, you matter. We all know that music matters, especially what we're doing in this career year and whatever it looks like. I was going to say life, career life, whatever it is you're doing, it matters and you're doing the right thing. Be you. And I'll see you next time on the Music Ed Matters podcast.